Jarvis, sometimes you gotta run before you can walk. This is Aviator Cast, episode 32.
Calling all aviators, pilots, and aviation lovers. Welcome to Aviator Cast, where we close the gap between real aviation and flight simulation. Climb aboard, buckle up, and prepare for takeoff. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. Flying takes us so many places, visiting family, going on vacation, or landing that important business meeting. For me, though, one of my favorite destinations is the aircraft itself. I still marvel and appreciate the blessing of flight. There is truly nothing like it. I'm the founder and owner of Angle of Attack, a flight simulation training company, which is bringing you this podcast today. Aviator Cast is a weekly podcast where we talk about the spirit of the aviator. We believe flying is an art form, one that we have to continually practice and master. This mastery is gained through a focus on continual learning, human factors, humility, and a commitment to excellence. Show notes, transcript, community discussion, and links for this episode can be found by simply going to aviatorcast.com. So welcome to this, the 32nd episode of Aviator Cast. I'm really excited to have you here. I'm so glad that you come back episode after episode to join us for a new and exciting topic. We have a fantastic guest today, but before we get to that, we have a review coming to us from iTunes. This comes from Ferdinand Andronkovich. I hope I pronounced that right, from the United States. He says, awesome, I was looking for something like this, 5 stars. Thank you so much for dedicating your time and experience like this. Really cool. I'm about to go through my instrument check ride, and this is helping me think of aviation the whole time. Really nice. Thanks, Ferdinand. The pleasure is all ours. We are really excited to have you here. Now, if you want to leave a review, you, the listener today, you can do so on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. That's really all we ask of you if you enjoy this show, and that helps others know about this podcast, and then maybe, just maybe, I will share your review on air. So today we have a very interesting guest. So at the beginning of the show, you heard my intro. You're probably wondering what it is, and I think I said Jarvis. Something about Jarvis, sometimes you gotta run before you can walk. That comes from Iron Man. So this particular episode today is closely related to Iron Man now. How is that possible? So do you remember in Iron Man when he was in the suit and really, you know, that's a full-on helmet, right? So he would need some way to look outside, but he had that heads-up display inside that he could basically look around and see stuff. Well, today we are going to talk about a technology that is available today that is still being developed, but it's available today that can basically do this in a cockpit for you. So it'll have all sorts of stuff already available, stuff like airports, navigation aids, ADS-B traffic, your flight plan route and waypoints, airways, and then some geographic points of interest. So already those things are available, and then there's going to be more available, more stuff available in the future, and really the sky's the limit. I mean, your creativity starts to go wild and you can think of all these things that can be displayed there. But basically it's this 3D world. It's this 3D representation of the outside world and information that you can get as a pilot that is then displayed on some glasses that you wear, much like Google Glass, and that you can view. So without further ado, I think the people behind what is called AeroGlass explain this a lot better than I can. So let's get right to this interview, this Hangar Talk interview with AeroGlass.
Now, a special Hangar Talk segment.
All right, everybody, we are honored to have Jeffrey Johnson with us today from AeroGlass. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing fantastic. So I saw you guys at Oshkosh. You were actually a couple booths down from someone that I was helping out. And you have a very, very unique product. We're going to get into that today and kind of talk about this very futuristic thing that you guys have. first, I want to know a little bit more about you and how you kind of molded yourself in aviation. Tell us a little bit about your past, your education, and where you are in aviation right now.
Right on. So yeah, I'm the vice president of products here at Aeroglass, and so I really handle the interface, you know, talking to the customers, the beta users, and sort of helping the development team prioritize what features we're going to be adding. And I've got a background in GIS. I've been a software developer for, 20 years now, and worked in the defense contracting space for the last several years, and left that recently to start this project with my co-founders. But I went to school at Humboldt State and studied geography and geospatial technology, and been doing software development around geospatial mapping stuff for better part of a decade now. And I'm not actually a pilot. I've got probably 100 hours right seat now, and starting to learn more and more as I go, doing testing. I probably log the most test hours of any of our team. And so I'll probably start my lessons again in the fall. Our main test pilot's just finishing a CFI, so I'll probably study with him. And our founder is owns and flies a DA-40, and some of the other developers are pilots. But I've been in love with aviation for a long time, and it's fun to get to work on a startup in the aviation space again. So
yeah, for sure. Well, looking at this product and the technology, I see that you fit very well into your role, in that you've had a lot of experience and education in doing what your specific role here is, which is the software side, the UI, the UX. So, I mean, all of that is super, super important. So it's good that you are focused on that, while the other guys are maybe more focused on the flying part of it. So definitely nothing wrong with that, that, you're not a pilot. Doesn't mean you don't love aviation. We get plenty of people on the show that that are kind of in that same space. So, I mean, your stuff is fascinating. So why don't you tell people, just very basic, they've never heard of you before, what is Aeroglass?
Okay, yeah. So Aeroglass is a 3D augmented reality application that runs on like Android-based head-mounted displays. So you've probably all heard of Google Glass by now. So the app runs on Google Glass. We actually started our development program on Glass. But this new device from Epson, Moverio, Epson is the printer company, and they make this optical head-mounted display that's quite a bit more capable than Google Glass. So it's basically, the app's basically a personal portable heads-up display that can show like your aircraft attitude, static data, airports, runways, nav aids, waypoints, all that sort of stuff. Also other traffic in the air, if they have ADS-B transponders. So you basically look through the glasses and you see outside of your cockpit with an overlay of aviation data. And so normally, pilots are looking down at a chart or a tablet app, and they look back up and think in 3D, like there's the airspace over there, this is the route I'm on. You can see other traffic. And with our app, instead of doing that, instead of thinking in 3D, you just see those things augmented onto your normal vision as you look out of the app. I mean, as you look out of the window out of your cockpit. So Google Glass, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with that and have seen stuff around that. So it's, it's the same sort of idea. You're looking at a display that's overlaid on your normal vision, and then also looking out and seeing. So that's different from virtual reality, something like Oculus Rift, where you're actually not seeing outside of the glasses. This is actually see-through, and so it's augmenting your normal vision.
Yeah, to me, when I tested it out, which, you're just kind of standing there and kind of looking at a 3D representation when you're in a hangar like we were, but it's almost like this sci-fi movie. It almost reminds me of one of these Tom Cruise movies where he has the headset on and he can see everything as he looks around in the world. He can see everything depicted. And that's basically exactly what Aeroglass does. But, for us, it's not depicting alien spaceships or something. It's depicting airways. It's depicting airspace, airports. And we'll get into some of those more specifics on the things that are available now and things that may come later, but it's actually displaying information that's useful to the pilot. And so you can spend a lot more of that time heads up, looking outside, rather than, kind of interpreting all of the information that you have into that 3D space. So it's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of movies lately that have this kind of technology mocked up. So like Patriot Games and Ender's Game Iron Man and all those sorts of things that they all, it's that same concept, but applied to the aviation space. So you're seeing aviation data as you look out your window.
Right. So we're actually bringing that stuff to a practical application. And I was telling you before the show that I think I was half dreaming last night because I sent you these show notes at like 2 a.m. But I was half dreaming last night. I'm like, man, is this too far in the future? This just seems like it can't be real. And really it is. It's just interesting that this futuristic thing is kind of making its way into general aviation. And it's really cool. So I'm definitely excited to talk about it more. What are some of the technical aspects that are going on behind the background? So you mentioned the Epson display viewer and kind of how this is like Google Glass. Tell us a little bit more about how that works, maybe from a technical level.
Yeah, so the difference between Google Glass and the Epson devices is Google Glass, the whole computer is actually right there on your face, including the battery and all of its antennas. It's all resides right there on your face. The Epson device is a bit bulkier and has two projectors, so projects over both of your eyes. And that has a wire that runs down to a pocket computer about the size of your cell phone. And that's an Android device with a pretty capable processor in there. And that's got a touchscreen display that you use, or a slider pad basically, that you use to control the user interface. And so basically you have two HD displays, one in each eye. And the glasses themselves have their own gyro and accelerometer and compass to sense the orientation that your head is pointed in. And the GPS is in the controller, the hand computer, and the app can also pair with these AHARs, ADS-B devices from Level. Mm-hmm. And so those are used to get your aircraft attitude and also the other traffic, and they have a much more accurate WAS, 64-channel GPS in them. Mm-hmm. And so those are the basic components, and the technology basically takes a nav database. We convert that into basically a 3D, calculate the 3D geometries of those things, have a 3D database, and send that display out through the projector. And so when you're looking around, the glass knows which direction you're looking and will turn the camera in the app to your head direction. It's basically like the library we use under the hood is basically like Google Earth, or it's a 3D virtual globe. You can turn on the base map if you want and terrain, but usually you run without those things, but it knows which direction you're pointed, where you're at. And if you use the eye level devices, it'll show you the attitude of your airplane. And with the sort of experimental eye level devices, you can hook it up to your pitot and get air data and get true airspeed. Wow. and that sort of thing. So yeah, those are the sort of technical aspects. It's basically an Android device that has projectors that project right in front of your eye to show you the overlay based on where you're looking.
It almost sounds make-believe, but it's real. It's happening. And it's interesting because there's so many of these new technologies that are coming out. ADS-B is becoming one of those things that is just a norm. Every pilot needs to know what ADS-B is and what you're getting with ADS-B. But to have all of this stuff right here displayed in front of your eyes without having to look down at instruments, it's just kind of wild, and it's almost too hard to believe, but...
Yeah, the interesting thing will be when we can, some of the avionics manufacturers have these connected cockpit. I mean, that's a sort of Garmin specific term, but they have, initiatives or products that they're putting out where your actual engine instruments, the avionics can put out a Wi-Fi connection. And so you should actually, in the future, we'll be able to show engine information and all kinds of other things that you'd still have to look down to see now because those aren't displayed. But, eventually we like to be able to show all of that kind of information right in the glass. So you never, never actually do need to look down.
I kind of imagine a twin engine airplane, right? And instead of kind of a cargo compartment up front, it's just a full glass bubble or something like that. And in the future, you almost have just a hand controller that you control the displays that you're actually seeing. And you can see a lot more out front of the airplane, but you control everything just with your heads-up display, and that's what you see. So I don't know. Like, maybe it could go that direction. It probably will.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things we're doing is there's a company called Meta up in Silicon Valley, and they're sort of the darlings of the augmented reality world right now. You can check their site out. It's spaceglasses.com. But we've started working with their technology as well, and that has quite good cameras in the display, and those are used like I mentioned in something like Iron Man, where you're actually interacting with the user interface with your hands in front of your face and moving things around. So you could, you know, sort of like reach out and click on an airspace to get more information. Maybe it was a special use airspace, and you could click to get the hours of, you know, activated hours or things like that. But yeah, so that's even more sort of futuristic and down the line, but it's something we're working on, and we think it's really, really cool.
Right on. Have you guys tried to use this in a simulated environment, like in a flight simulator yet?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it currently, we have a X-plane mode in the app, so it will pick up the aircraft attitude and position from the simulator. X-plane is just set up to do that already. You just configure which IP address and port you're going to send the data out to. So you just configure it for your glasses, and then the app just slaves to X-plane, so you can wherever the plane is at in the simulator, you can just look around at that position and see all the same data you would see if your own aircraft was up there. We've looked at a couple other simulators out there, flight gear. A lot of us come from the open source world, so flight gear is pretty popular in that open source world. But X-plane, you know, the basics are all set up there in X-plane. You can also record your flights and play them back, so you can, you know, play back your ILS approach or something like that, and speed it up or slow it down. So those are kind of two simulated modes we have. There's several different, you know, modes of setting up the app, and X-plane's definitely one of them. I've logged a lot of time flying that myself, so pretty cool.
That's really interesting. I'd be interested. I didn't see any of this material yet, but I'd be interested in actually seeing videos of that. If you guys had some sort of if you could capture the video of that stuff over top the simulator, that'd be pretty interesting, but I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, we have a sort of rig that Epson's given us to capture the video through the glass and look outside. So we're definitely, I don't know how interesting that would be with the simulator, because you'd be looking around in your office or whatever, but definitely running that in the cockpit to send, you know, basically create a video of what the app sees.
Yeah.
Versus both outside the cockpit and in the app. And so we're still working on refining that system with them. The older version of the Epson had the capability to just record video, record the camera and the app at the same time, but the newer ones don't. And so we're working on these kind of, it's a 3D printed contraption that basically put a consumer grade camera in that and shoot through the projected image and to outside. So I'm still experimenting with that. We'll have to iterate on that a few more times before it gets producing quality video. But yeah, the simulator, I guess we could do some recording of what the simulator's seeing and looking around. But then in that case, the camera, you know, recording the actual camera on the device, that doesn't lend much, because you're kind of just looking around in your room or your office or whatever. So
I mean, really what it would do is it would demonstrate what you guys do already anyway. But one of the great things you had at your booth in Oshkosh, and you have it right on the front page of your website, glass.aero, and .aero is the extension. It's not a .com, it's .aero. So glass.aero is, you have a video there that essentially is kind of what your program will be once it's fully realized. And so, you know, it's live action, you have great camera work and everything, and it shows kind of what this all looks like to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we worked with a really good 3D animator on that video and basically took our flight log and the log of the glasses as we were looking around. And he, you know, he does motion tracking and overlays that stuff on top of it. And really what we're trying to do is set the bar very high for all, you know, the design and the user interface, and work through some of the concepts. We'll be, you know, making some new clips and running those by the beta testers and asking, you know, does this display show the information the way you would be useful to you? So we really, that's both like a concept video to show where we want to get to eventually, but also to just kind of set the bar very high in terms of what the visual experience is like in the glass. So of course you tried the app and you know that it displays many of those same things, but doesn't look as nice as the video does. And so we, you know, we're constantly trying to create, set the bar high, and then achieve that in the software. And we'll keep doing that in an iterative way over the next couple of months. So,
right. It's just a very good demonstration of what could be, and in theory, what it is. And even though the technology may not be to the point where there's the perfect 3D tracking like that, it doesn't look exactly like that. I'd imagine that as technology catches up, it will look like that someday. So it's cool that you guys absolutely are actually shooting for that, because it does look really good. I mean, it looks good now, even in the glasses, but to have it look that way in the actual cockpit would just be mind blowing.
Yeah, it's, I think the guys that do the OpenGL development are a little scared that we set the bar too high, that they won't ever be able to make it look that good with the processors. But I mean, I remember my first iPhone, and remember my smartphones before that. And, you know, all that stuff's just going to keep getting better, faster, lighter, cheaper over the next several years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the hardware will become more capable, bigger field of view, higher resolution displays in your eyes, and faster processors. So we can do more with 3D.
I mean, really the sky's the limit when you're talking about technologies like this. We don't know if someday we'll just have a contact that we just put in our eye and it's somehow connected to the contact. You know, we have no idea. I mean, these things are possible.
We did an interview for the EAA's Innovators video series, and they asked us, what do you expect in Oshkosh 2024? And that was one of the things. You know, I think the displays will become so light that they're, you know, a contact or a really, really light set of glasses, and the processors will be able to do all kinds of stuff that we can't even imagine today. So yeah, it's definitely going to grow and, you know, evolve and mature, like the smartphone market has. So
great. Well, let's talk a little bit about what can actually be displayed in AeroGlass. So what can be displayed right now? What have you guys implemented with this so far in your beta program?
Well, we're using the FAA's coded instrument flight procedures database. So that has all your basic airports, runway footprints, navigation aids, waypoints, route structures. We also can pull ADS-B traffic from the eye level device. You can actually get traffic on the ground over the internet. We use an API from one of the companies that supplies traffic, but that's obviously not too much use in the air. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you get all that basic data, and then also just geographic points of interest like cities and villages and all that sort of stuff. We also have the ILS approach cones. That's probably the sexiest feature that's in there now. I guess you probably saw that at Oshkosh.
I don't know if I did.
Okay, so you can actually look at the approach cones for ILSs. Basically, we take the localizer and glide slope parameters and create 3D cone out of that, so you can fly through that. And then we're working on a web-based flight planning apps. That's pretty simple. Just put in your flight plan string, and then that'll load your flight plan into the glass. So those are all the things that are in there today. I mean, of course, there's a HUD with the the displays of your elevation and heading and roll and pitch and yaw. Of course those require you use the eye level device to see that.
Yeah.
And then like we talked about, you know, there's the simulator mode, playback mode, things like that. And then there's user interface, controls to turn on and off those layers, set the decluttering, properties, so you know you don't want to see every single waypoint. So yeah, all that sort of stuff. And then the stuff that we're working on for the future is airspaces. That's probably the most important thing for us right now. And the real, we can actually render those, but the real issue now is, I mean, I fly here in pretty complicated airspace in Southern California, and the airspace, there's so much airspace that it really bogs down the processor and slows down the frame rate so much that it's not very usable. So we didn't actually put that into the demo we showed at Oshkosh or send out to the beta testers. So we're working on optimizing that so we can actually show all the complex airspace and color them by, you know, color TFRs or special use airspace, that sort of thing. And it's sort of the same story with the elevation. We can show a terrain map now. We use SRTM data, but it can certainly like slow down the frame rate and the processor quite a bit. So we're working on optimizing that. So, and then beyond that, we're really going to add other kinds of procedures other than just the ILS, and other ways of other collision avoidance technologies. So FLARM is really popular in Europe for gliders. There's also the PCAS systems and TCAS and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we also are looking pretty, you know, pretty carefully at weather. The Sirius XM devices that put out all the weather, that would be obviously be super awesome to see weather in 3D.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just other dynamic stuff like NOTAM and TFRs and things like that. That's a little farther down the line. And then all the ground face stuff, you know, right now we just have the runways, but adding taxiways and gates and all that sort of stuff is farther down the line. And also, you know, just the 3D terrain avoidance, basically like you would see in a synthetic vision system, and adding obstacles will be, you know, obstacle day. We get a lot of inquiries from helicopter pilots that are particularly interested in obstacles. And probably the farthest thing out there is the checklist stuff that you saw in the video. Mm-hmm. We've done some basic experimentation with that, but, it actually would use the camera in the glasses, which we don't use at all otherwise. But it has a little small camera in there, but that would really require you put out markers on your instrument panel so that the computer knew where you were looking and where you were touching.
Right.
And so obviously that's required to be, customized for every instrument panel. So we'll be working on that, trying to, you know, set it up so people can upload a photo of their instrument panel and set out the markers and set up the, how they want to do their checklist. I mean, I realize a lot of people, you know, sort of customize their checklist even, mm-hmm. from, you know, from the manufacturer's instructions. So that's probably the farthest thing out, but then, you know, the other things are, you know, improving the user interface. A lot of people are, you know, think that's good to use like a Bluetooth keyboard. We're also looking at things like, integrating with, headset manufacturers that, support Bluetooth. So you could do voice recognition. Mm. So you could, you know, change your flight plan or something with your voice. And then also, lots and lots and lots of integration questions. So, people are asking, you know, can you integrate with ForeFlight or can you integrate with WingX or can you integrate with this other avionics device I have? So there'll be a lot of that coming. Our goal, you know, our hope is that we can work with some of the tablet manufacturers. So you could do things like, you know, modify your flight plan on the tablet and send that up to the glass because, you know, typing on the glass device is not super easy. It's a little bit clumsy. So, there's that kind of stuff coming down the road, but at the moment, yeah, it's just all your basic static data. And, we've added the ILS approach cones and that sort of stuff. That's very cool in 3D. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of stuff to do, come a long way and a lot of stuff to do for sure.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of potential both now and in the future. So why don't we go through kind of just a regular everyday scenario? It sounds like, I mean, you know, all the lingo, you've been saying stuff that I've been pretty surprised about as far as special use airport or special use airspace closure times. You know, a lot of stuff about aviation.
I know my stuff, man. Yeah. I back in about 2007 or so, I worked in a company that was producing a system for foreign civil aviation authorities, so the equivalent of the mm-hmm. FAA and other countries. And so they were, you know, each country produces a paper, you know, basically a paper document that has all their navigation information in that. Mm-hmm. So I built some GIS systems that they use to maintain those documents and databases. And so I've been looking at approach plates for, you know, 7-8 years now and know what's going on. Yep, exactly.
So take us through a regular flight that maybe not what the capabilities are today. I mean, maybe that's good enough just to talk about what the capabilities are today, but kind of your end game or your first iteration that you're going to be really, really pleased about with some of these additions of airspaces and things, what that flight would be like from a pilot's perspective. So maybe let's talk about from the ramp up into top of climb.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first set of things, is just to sort of visualize your flight plan. So your initial takeoff and climb, what's your, you know, if you're flying IFR, which, you know, what are your first waypoints you're going to hit, which Victor Airway you're going to join. And then, you know, once you get to the top of climb, you know, you're going to want to, like, common flight I do is just out of Palomar Airport in Carlsbad, take off, turn north, head up towards LA and look around. Like, so we have the, you know, restricted airspace over, Camp Pendleton, the special use. I mean, I guess it's, it's always on from up to 1500 feet. And then above 1500 feet, it's on sometimes and off. So being able to look out over that, see if that's restricted, depends if you're going to turn and go that way. And then, you know, just hitting each of your waypoints as you go. And then it's kind of like in the video there. Like, so if you do a, if you're going to land at some airport up in LA, you'd get the ILS into, you know, controller tells you to go ahead and pick up the ILS, and you just visualize that through all the way to the ground. You know, and of course in the process, if you're getting traffic, if the ATC is letting you know there's traffic to look for, you should be able to see that. If, you know, again, that's all dependent upon whether the aircraft in the sky have ADS-B transponders. But yeah, I mean, you go through all the phases of flight and look out your window and see both your flight plan and, again, the, you know, airspaces are particularly important. Other traffic's particularly important. And then just as you're flying along on your, you know, Victor Airway, or if you're VFR, just looking around to make sure you stay out of airspace that you're not supposed to be in. And, you know, sort of in the future, one of the things I forgot to mention is we're really interested in looking at VFR traffic patterns as a sort of heat map. Hmm. If you know, whenever, you know, I'm returning to Carlsbad, we pretty much always turn base and turn final at the same points. And really, I land a lot also at Oceanside. And there, you know, sort of everybody knows to turn base at this one particular apartment complex and then turn final at this other one and sort of stay, you know, don't go too far out because the neighbors down there complain about noise. So, I mean, that's sort of like a well-known thing, but it's not, if you could visualize that as you were, visualize that in the glass, like this is the most common VFR, you know, approach pattern. So, you know, it's like in each phase of flight, what you're, you know, depending on what's important to you in that phase of flight, you should be able to see those things. And also, of course, you know, at all the time you're seeing the aircraft's attitude and your heading and the display, your altitude. If you connect to the eye level device with your pitot, you know, you get your airspeed. So all that stuff's heads up all of the time. And then of course you can always just look around and see, okay, there's, you know, there's an airport over there. There's an airport over there. One of the things we've wanted to add as well, which we'll really, really commonly request, is to see all the frequencies. So if you, you know, I want to, you know, focus on this airport, and it should bring up the frequencies and let you know how to talk to the tower or the ground. So all of those things, we have all the data to display all of those things. And now it's really a sort of iterative process for us to figure out what should be displayed during each phase of flight and sort of test those assumptions with our beta community.
I mean, if all this comes to fruition, it almost makes an IFR rating obsolete with all of this information.
I think a lot of the old time guys would not. I mean, there's some interesting threads out there about this particular topic. I mean, there's one on Vans Air Force about our product, and there's certainly, you know, a segment of old timers that are like, you know, you should be able to fly with a chart and a watch and a compass. But I don't think it's a substitute for, you know, for airmanship, but it certainly will, you know, put a lot of things that you normally had to think about very carefully in 3D in your head, or, you know, look at your instruments. You should be able to visualize those things in 3D and really, you know, much more easy experience to, you know, figure those things out. I wouldn't recommend anybody, you know, substitute it for good airmanship, but it's certainly a you know, will be a great device, you know, great assistive device for aviation.
Yeah. Well, you know, you always want to have that base set of training so the pilot is safe. And it's actually something we've already faced in aviation, having technologically advanced aircraft TAAs with, you know, Garmin, everything, and synthetic vision, and this attitude that pilots had at the time when all this technology was coming to market, that they could not have an instrument rating and fly into those conditions, and then the accident rates went up, even though these were brand new airplanes with all this nice technology that was supposed to give them better situational awareness. So, you know, as long as that base is there, this can be used as an enhancement. I can definitely see that argument in people for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, technology is just never going to be a good substitute for basic airmanship, but, you know, there's, I'm not a Luddite to say I'm not going to use these things. Right. I think they're all have their place, and, you know, it's sort of up to the pilot in command to use all the tools available to him to, you know, improve situational awareness. So
it's really cool, because all of these different things that we've talked about are unique, and they're probably things that you got from your own ideas and from the ideas of other people. And it's like this big creative space that hasn't really been filled yet, that you can just throw things in here. Because as you were talking, I was thinking, well, what would happen if air traffic control call up, they gave you a vector to approach or whatever, your system recognized what they said and basically built that funnel or the cones or whatever it is for you to go that direction. And maybe it was in white, not magenta. And then you had to tell the system to activate it. You know, it's just crazy.
There's all kinds of possibilities. And, I'm really particularly interested in the voice recognition stuff. I think we talked to Lightspeed and Bose and Clarity Aloft and all those folks at Oshkosh. And I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff that could be done with voice recognition. Even if you're reading back things, if, you know, maybe it doesn't understand ATC, but if you read things back carefully to the app, it could, you know, you could change your flight plan. You could, you know, when you get a procedure assignment, you know, all those sorts of things. I mean, there's even cool stuff you could do with directional audio. You could get an audio clue that traffic is over here before you actually looked over there. So there's all kinds of stuff that could be done, you know, with headsets, but also with, you know, all kinds of different avionics out there, and also with existing tablet apps. So yeah, it's really cool. I feel like sometimes we're the stone soup here, right? I mean, we've created a base, and lots of other people are going to bring stuff to the table that really make it cool, but build on what we've started with. So it's really going to be interesting over the next couple of years to see what we can add and what other people bring to the table.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. So we talked about, well, I mentioned the IFR rating thing and how this kind of maybe will make that obsolete. So in that same vein, what are some of the human factors concerns that you've heard come up? So, people have talked about this blocking vision. Maybe pilots would focus too much on the data. I mean, really some of the same things that we have in other applications where, you know, people were looking at the Garmin or the G1000 too much and they had fixation on it or things like that. So I know that you have several of these that people have come up with time and time again. Can you tell us about some of those human factors answers? And
well, yeah, the biggest thing we hear about so far is eye strain. And some folks just really said their eyes don't ever get used to it. They've done, you know, quite a few hours and it's really difficult for their eyes. It causes eye strain. And a lot of people talked about that with Google Glass as well. With Google Glass, especially, you're looking up into the right of your vision. But most people actually just, you know, eventually get used to it. I guess that's like with anything, a new set of glasses that you get from your optician, it takes a little while for your eyes to adjust to looking that way. But then, yeah, the most important thing for us in terms of human factors is really the user interface. I mean, it's admittedly kind of clumsy now. I know how to use it quite well because I've logged a lot of hours, but I mean, for other people, it's, you know, having to, turn on and off things that may be distracting, it's a little bit clumsy. So we're working on, you know, the user interface there, but, nobody should really be relying on this as the, you know, primary means of navigation now. So I guess not enough people have logged enough hours to sort of talk about that issue with, being right, fixated on something electronic versus looking out the window and just flying, what is it? Fly the effing plane. what is that acronym? FTFP. I guess we'll hear more about that as the beta community grows and everybody gets flying. We have many things we need today, but I mean, it's going to be a long time before people put away their, you know, tablet apps or quit looking at their other avionics devices. So, so eye strain and, you know, user interface and, that sort of thing are the kind of main human factors. I haven't really heard much about the, blocking vision. It doesn't seem to occlude your vision too much on the sides. And we also get the question all the time about, is it comfortable under a headset? And it's actually the frames of the glasses are pretty thin. And I wear it under light speed now, and it's, you know, I've done 3-hour flights. Not too bad. Not much leakage out of it as well. So, that, you know, I guess those are the kind of things. I mean, we're, you know, there's a whole school of, you know, academics around user experience, and there's plenty of papers out there about, you know, heads up display, you know, human computer interaction. And so, you know, we'll be taking note of those, and also, you know, just really trying to work with our beta community to make sure that, you know, the displays and the user interface is really, really usable for them. And I presume that all the other avionics manufacturers, glass cockpit manufacturers, do a lot of user testing as well. But I think that there's just no substitute for, you know, logging a lot of hours and, you know, finding out what works and what doesn't work and kind of iterating as you go. Right. So that's, you know, that's kind of the tact we're going to take.
And, you know, that's one of the things that a lot of general aviation pilots, or even pilots in general, don't realize, is that there is so much user interface design that goes into everything we experience in aviation. And so, speaking about that from a human factors perspective, when you see the layout of an Airbus or a Boeing or a Cessna or really any aircraft, if the manufacturer has any sense, they would have spent a lot of time thinking these things through and thinking how all this is laid out. And then you get into the software side of that, where there, I'm sure there's a whole team or teams of people at Garmin that do this specific thing. All they do is they work on little symbols and the exact color of those symbols and how they interact and what the chimes look like. And so, I mean, this stuff, although it's subconscious to pilots, it's very, very important, because we need kind of, they call it the common cockpit. So we need to have those commonalities between the different technologies to where it's not totally confusing going from one cockpit to a different cockpit, or maybe one heads-up display to a different heads-up display. It's all kind of common in a way, but, you know, you guys would obviously have your unique aspects to it too. You would have your unique things that you are doing first, perhaps, before anyone else has tried them. And so you would have had to design those things. So that is so important. And it's subconscious to pilots, but in the past, it's really led to a lot of accidents. And so it's really great to hear that that is one of your big core focuses.
Yeah, I mean, and that's partly my role at the company as well, is just to really listen to the feedback from people that are flying with the app and, you know, make sure we listen to what they have to say and incorporate that into the next build as we iterate. There's all kinds of things, like, you know, when we pull ADS-B traffic, we use kind of standard collision avoidance symbology, that, you know, maybe ATC would see in the tower. But maybe that's, you know, maybe we need to enhance it or add things to that to, you know, make it work better in a 3D environment. Of course, you know, looking over at airspaces, you know, what colors do you want to see those in? You know, how should you differentiate between a, you know, Bravo airspace and, you know, Charlie airspace or, you know, SUA or whatever. So, you know, there's all kinds of those things that probably nobody's ever done before. So we're just going to have to figure out. And at the same time, there's a whole body of, you know, common symbology across different platforms that we try to adhere to as much as possible in, you know, when that's feasible. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, that goes for any kind of software, like you said, any software, any, you know, interface, human computer interface. You know, it's really good to just sort of listen to your users and iterate and make sure, you know, what you're doing works for them their use case.
Yeah, which is the genius of your beta program right now. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in getting that feedback at this early stage. Next question, and I'm sure you get this one a lot. What is the deal with FAA certification? Will this need to be certified? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we actually had an FAA inspector at the booth at Oshkosh, and he told us, you know, basically his own opinion, covered up his name badge. He said, you know, he would still consider, as an inspector, he would still consider it a handheld device, just like your cell phone. So, you know, you're going to have some primary means of navigation. It's a, you know, class 1 EFB, I guess. But it's, you know, it's more or less considered like your cell phone. It doesn't, you know, mount to the plane unless you know, use the eye level AW device, and that, you know, just has to be mounted. It's actually not certified. So, you know, people that use that are usually in an experimental aircraft. If you want to mount that to your pitot, but at the moment there's no, doesn't seem to be any certification requirements, but of course the FAA is, you know, certainly may have something to say about it eventually. Right. I mean, I remember flying drones, you know, 7-8 years ago, and we thought the rules were pretty clear, and they came out with some clarification that said, no, this is actually what we meant. And so then, you know, that we may see that same sort of thing here, that there's some clarification that if you're actually wearing these types of devices, they're going to have something different to say about that. But at the moment, you know, our interpretation, and this one unnamed FAA inspector said, you know, they're treated more or less like your cell phone now. So
interesting. Well, let's hope that trend continues. So, you know, we talked a lot about aviation, and I'm sure that this is going to be one of your main focuses, but what other industries are you planning on using this type of technology in?
You know, we've had a lot of interest from the UAV space, and I fly a 3D Robotics X8 myself, and do FPV and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of interest from there in the kind of, you know, lower end, you know, hobbyist to, you know, semi-commercial UAV space. Actually, Epson's also partnered with DJI Phantom, or with DJI, and they're making an app that will run on the same Movario glasses to do FPV and get your, you know, get your flight information that's downlinked to show that in the display. So there's other people working on that. We've heard from people, you know, race cars. There's a really cool project on the web on Kickstarter now that's a augmented reality helmet for motorcyclists. That's been really, really popular. But really, we're trying to stay focused on the GA market. I mean, there's 400,000 pilots in AOPA, and we just believe that that's the key target market, and try not to get derailed from, you know, bringing a product to market in that space. But and then, you know, of course, you can't ever do something like this without getting a bunch of interest from the DOD. So we're, you know, hearing from lots of contractors and that sort of thing. But again, just mostly trying to not get derailed from bringing a GA product to market to make this kind of stuff affordable for, you know, your average GA guy. So
cool. And this is actually available right now in beta form, at least, right?
Yeah, we're doing a beta program with 200 people, and we've got about 20 spots left. We're really trying to filter through the responses. We have an online survey that you can get to at the bottom of our website. So we just ask some basic questions about, you know, how often you fly and what certifications you may have and what avionics you have or what apps you use. And so we're really trying to filter through those and find people that are pretty tech savvy and will give good feedback. So we've got about 20 spots left in that, and just kind of following up with a whole bunch of people to fill those. So you can go ahead and join that, fill out the survey. We'll get back to you and set you up to join the beta program if you want to. But yeah, after that, after those last 20 are filled, we will kind of close it off and just work with those people. So we have a kind of set of people.
Started at Oshkosh? Is that when you started?
It launched at Oshkosh, and we sold quite a few, beta pack hardware packages at Oshkosh, and then the rest have been done online since then. So,
okay. And what kind of feedback are you guys getting so far?
There's not a lot of people actually flying with the app yet. We sent about 20 sets home from Oshkosh. Mm-hmm. And we've had some feedback from them, and the rest of them are sort of waiting on us to ship, and we're going through, you know, when we get the device, the glasses from Epson, we go through the whole process of upgrading the firmware and installing apps. And they actually, Epson's asked us to install additional apps, Netflix and that sort of stuff. So we do that, and then we do our own quality control. So we're just going through the whole fulfillment process now. But the main thing we hear, you know, is kind of the same thing we heard at Oshkosh, which is, wow, this is totally cool. I want to show my friends. This is, you know, the future. I guess, you know, most people realize we still have quite a ways to go on the development to get everything really user friendly, but also, you know, improve the accuracy of the overlays and stuff like that. But I mean, we've had quite a lot of feedback. You know, honestly, one issue that we've heard a lot about is the gyros seem to drift. So they get they need recalibration somewhat often. And so that's something we're pretty actively working on. to improve that, both in the algorithm sense to, you know, to improve the algorithms we're using to read from those gyros, but also looking at other very inexpensive, like micro AHARS devices that you'd put on your headset or something like that, mm-hmm. to get an even better sense of the orientation of your head. Those are the main things. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback on the forums. But, you know, it's really this first wave of folks that have started flying with it. And the next big wave will come here in the next couple of weeks as we start shipping out all the devices that have been ordered.
I think everyone's still just trying to catch their breath from Oshkosh vendors.
Yeah, it's I'm still answering just an ungodly mountain of email every single day. So it's it's pretty crazy. It was my first Oshkosh, and it's been, I mean, sometimes I'm sending 200 or 300 mails a day, which is goodness. Pretty crazy. Yeah.
And you took the time away to meet with us. So
yeah, no problem. Thanks. This is fun stuff. So,
all right. So what are some other common questions that you're getting from pilots?
So these are easy because it's funny now we've got a frequently asked questions on the site. So the most commonly asked question is, what about prescription lenses? We hear that. I mean, at Oshkosh, online, everywhere.
You know, just recently I got my medical renewed, or am getting it renewed, and I had to get corrective lenses for the first time. So this is actually something that I'd be interested in too. So
yeah, so there's a frame that comes, the Epson ships with a plastic frame, and you basically take that to your optician and get a set of lenses put in it. And then it screws into the frame between your eyes and the projector. Mm-hmm. So you just take it and get your, you know, whatever your prescription is. So that's, you know, pretty easy question to answer. And then sunglasses snap on the outside. It comes with two different shades of sunglasses you snap on the outside. So that's by far the most commonly asked question. And the second most common one is about availability of data in specific countries. So interestingly enough, the most commonly, you know, out of our 1500 survey respondents or something like that, the most common country after the US is Brazil, which we didn't necessarily expect. Yeah, it's incredible. The population of people that responded from Brazil dwarfs all the European countries combined, which is really, really, really interesting. So, you know, we get all these questions. What about data in Brazil? What about data in Switzerland? What about data in Australia? So that's really, really common. And we're, you know, we have a global data set for airports, runways, nav aids, waypoints, but we don't have routes or airspaces or procedures in other countries than the US. So that's one thing we're just sort of actively working on to, either acquire data, we're talking to EASA in Europe, and you know, or just, you know, producing a database from the paper data or the AIP that the countries publish. And we're just trying to do that based on priority. So either license the data or you know, produce it ourselves from the paper data. There's also a pretty cool project in Europe called openaip.net, where they're trying to basically aggregate data for all the European countries in a sort of open way for non-commercial use. So if you're a GA pilot, you can just use that database. So that's, you know, data question is the second most common one. And then the other common questions are usually about integration with other devices. A lot of people ask about, what about my, you know, Stratus, or what about my, you know, G1000, or I use 4Flight, does it integrate with 4Flight, or, you know, all those kinds of integration questions. And so we steer all those to the forums. But between those kind of like three types of questions, those are certainly the most commonly asked ones. And, you know, a lot of people just ask, what do you get for the beta program? And, you know, the beta is set up to be the first 200 people get a lifetime data subscription and software update. So we get a lot of questions about that. But those are all pretty easy to answer. So we're try to steer people to the frequently asked questions, but I still answer tons and tons of emails. Yeah.
Damn. Well, hopefully you catch up soon, or maybe it'll just get worse with popularity.
I mean, we'll see. Your user base, you know, your listener base is pretty big, so maybe we'll get a bump from that. But I mean, it seems like the first big, huge wave of interest has died down, and not really died down, but it's just kind of slowed to a steady. And there was a huge wave of interest after Oshkosh and all the media that went out after that. But so we mostly caught up with that and just trying to get the first 200 set up. And then, of course, a bunch of, you know, business development questions, you know, talking to other vendors and stuff like that. So we're chasing all those things down. But it's barely manageable, but
yeah, sounds busy.
Going okay. Yeah.
So when are you guys thinking this will be available to the general public?
I mean, our goal is by the end of the year. And, but I mean, we really want to make sure we deliver a great product. So, you know, when we're going to, you know, we're going to work really carefully with the first 200 beta testers. And if that slips into Q1 next year, you know, that we're going to definitely wait until we have a really solid, well-tested product before we push it out to the wider market. But, yeah, the end of the year or early Q1, hopefully.
Well, this is pretty fascinating. It'd be interesting to have Aeroglass and be flying in the bush in Alaska. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, what data would be useful to you up there? I mean, not much in the way of airspaces, or I mean, maybe seeing all the airstrips, right? That would be the main thing.
Yeah, well, airstrips are pretty much anywhere you can land, I suppose. But I don't know, maybe glaciers you could put into your future points of interest or something. I don't know. Bears, yeah, I mean, watch out for bears on the beach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's kind of a generalized, you know, 3D engine, right? So any kind of point data, or you know any points of interest data, could be loaded up pretty easily, so you could just use it for looking around. I mean, I can imagine air you know, airlines just using the same sort of technology for their VIP customers. Like, here, you can actually look around and it'll tell you what you're looking at outside of the plane. Oh, yeah. Instead of the silly little map in your seat back, right? So yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things that can be done. It'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what develops over the next couple of years, both what we do and what other people bring to the table.
So. Yeah, cool. So where can our listeners learn more about Aeroglass?
Yeah. So the website, like you mentioned, just glass.aero, and there's a mailing list you can sign up for there. And we send out, I don't know, every couple of weeks, kind of an update. There's, you know, our blog, we post news on there. There's a survey if you want to just, you know, sign up for the beta program or just get in touch with us. There's a survey you can fill out.
So that survey is available to everybody. Anyone can do that.
Yeah. Okay. And we still get all kinds of, you know, respondents to that. And we're just, like I said, we're just filtering through that to get the last set of beta testers. And then we have a support help desk sort of site that has forums on it, and anybody can participate in that. It's support.glass.aero. So there's, you know, some forums on there, people ask integration questions, and anybody that's interested is welcome to join that. And then, yeah, we post to Twitter and Facebook, that kind of stuff as well. So, and yeah, just the website, all that stuff's linked off the website, glass.aero.
And that's where you can see the video of all this happening. It's one thing for us to sit here and talk about it, but all the listeners, you actually need to go and check that out, because then you really truly understand kind of the body of what's being taken on here and what it'll eventually look like, which is really impressive. And it really, seeing is believing.
Which, yeah, I mean, there's no set, like you got to see it at Oshkosh, and everybody, you know, I just loved all the smiles on people's faces when, you know, everybody from, you know, 16-year-old guys just doing their training in there with their dad at Oshkosh too. I mean, we had Dick Rattan come by at the very end of Sunday, and yeah, just the smiles on everybody's faces when they see it and think about the possibilities. Just, that's kind of one of the definitely motivating things.
It was a validation of what you guys are doing, in that your booth was always packed with people. There were always people just huddled around. Cause when people are at Oshkosh, I mean, they're everywhere, and a lot of the booths aren't that interesting, just to be 100% honest. I mean, there's some stuff there that probably shouldn't even be there, but so people just kind of mosey on by, and they shyly look at stuff and they're like, oh, hi, you know, but they keep walking. But when they get to your booth, everyone just stops walking and they watch that video. It's like, wow. And then, you know, they'll creep into the booth a little bit, and then they'll want to try out the glasses. So it's a good validation of what you guys are doing.
It was really, really, really cool to see, you know, everybody so interested. And like I said, everybody from young to old, and corporate pilots to, you know, gliders to people that fly ultralights and, you know, light sports stuff and business jets. And I mean, all across the whole range, everybody's just like, this is really cool. And that's, you know, that's a good validation. It definitely motivates us to deliver a really, really great product. So
awesome. Well, I know you're a busy guy. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. I know that the listeners will appreciate this look into the future, and I wish you the best success. Any last words for the listeners?
No, that's good. You know, if you're interested in joining, connect with us on the internet, and we'll get a conversation started. We'd love to work with anybody that's kind of an early adopter, and we'll be excited to bring it to the wider market pretty soon. So.
Awesome. Well, we wish you guys the absolute best success and getting all this stuff to market. It's going to be really cool to see.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
Talk to you later.
Yep. See ya. Okay, so that was a fantastic interview with Jeff. Jeff, thanks for joining us. I don't know about you, but this technology is kind of blowing my mind. I'm still having a problem wrapping my head around it, but the truth of the matter is that it's here, the future is here. This is one of those things that just shows that technology is continually working its way into the general aviation cockpit and to aviation in general. And this is quite incredible. I don't know how we didn't see this coming. I don't know why we didn't expect this, but it's really cool what Aeroglass is doing. I hope you guys choose to go and check out their website and watch the video that shows exactly what it looks like. Not exactly what it looks like, but what it'll look like in the future. Glass.aero, and you can check out the video there. There's a lot of great information there that you can get on this current system. I did try this out myself and was really impressed. It doesn't look exactly like it does in the video, but you definitely get the idea of what they're shooting for, and it's very, very impressive. It'll be very interesting to see how this works its way into the aviation cockpit, into our general aviation cockpit, and how it will assist us as pilots to have better situational awareness. So really, really interesting. I challenge you guys to check that out. And if you have time, also take the survey that they have at glass.aero. I believe Jeff said it was at the bottom of the page. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. This is absolutely fascinating. We're looking forward to what you guys come up with at Aeroglass. And hopefully you continue to trend in the right direction and we come up with some fantastic things. We always look forward to these new technologies that kind of blow our minds. We experienced that with glass cockpits, and there's obviously going to be something next that takes us into the future. So we're really excited about what you guys are doing with Aeroglass. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on AVATORcast. You can truly shape this show and the topics we provide. Take a quick 2-minute survey at survey.avatorcast.com. Do you want to be a part of the AVATORcast community or leave a comment? Go to avatorcast.com to join in or write me directly at me@avatorcast.com. I got an email this week at avatorcast and it was really great. It was a listener reaching out and saying, hey, your show has meant so much to me. And I really, really appreciated that. And I always appreciate those emails. I always write back personally. So if you would like to write me or you have a thought or idea, definitely feel free to do that. me@avatorcast.com. Say that you don't want to miss another episode of AVATORcast? Absolutely no worries. You can subscribe through email at avatorcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or SoundCloud. If you are an Apple user or an iTunes user, I would ask that you subscribe on iTunes. It's probably the easiest source, but one of those other sources work as well. We try to put it in front of you in as many places as possible, even in its basic form, just on a web page where you can hit the play button. We'd love to get an honest review from you on iTunes, assuming that you use it there. This helps others learn about AVATORcast so that they can enjoy this podcast as well. We talked about that earlier when we had that review from Ferdinand. And those really go a long way, and they go a long way to motivate our team each week too, to keep pushing forward and keep providing you with these awesome podcasts. So if you'd like to check out any of our training products here at Angle of Attack, head to flyaoamedia.com. Start with the basics for free with Aviator 90, learn instrument flying and more with Aviator Pro, or even fly many of the world's most popular jets virtually with our training products for the 737, 747, 777, and MD-11, again at flyaoamedia.com. And also, Angle of Attack offers professional video services at angleofattackpro.com. Many thanks go out to the Angle of Attack crew for all of their hard work to make this and every episode of AVATORcast possible and all they do outside AVATORcast so that each and every week you and I can get together and we can have a fantastic time with great folks like those at Aeroglass. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of AviatorCast. It truly is about all about you. We are truly grateful to have you here, part of our community, and so engaged in this wonderful passion for flying things. Until next time, throttle on!
Cat 5-8 is ready. Cat 5-8 in the shoreline, turn left heading 235, maintain 2000, runway 25 right, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 25 right, United 580.